Welcome to the Adventures in Arting podcast. This is episode number 8, Coco Daisy, recorded on January 9th, 2013. Hi, my name is Julie Fafan Balzer, and with me is my co-host, Eileen Schubalzer. Hi, Mom.
Hello.
So, Mom and I are headed out on a big arting adventure. We're going to California. We got a I have three cities to go to. She's only going to two, but we're starting out in Anaheim at the Craft and Hobby Association's annual show, which is a big convention where they show all the new products for the season. And I think Mom's a little sad that she's going to miss the Patriots game and what is else? The Emmys or something that's coming up? The Golden Globes, right?
Well, I'll be in my hotel room watching the Patriots. So don't worry about me.
I know. It's a tragedy when I take you away from that. And then we're going to San Francisco because my aunt and uncle and my grandma all live there. So we're going to have a lot of dumplings, right, Mom?
Yes, we are. And your grandmother just turned 93, so I think a visit is in order.
I think so. I have to tell you that the Chinatown in San Francisco, I think, is the best in America. It kicks the butt of the Chinatown here in New York City. And then Mom's going home. She's getting an award. She's getting the Unity Award. What's the organization that's giving this award, Mom, to?
It's called the World in Watertown. They have a big breakfast on Martin Luther King Day, so I'm very honored to get this award.
And then while she's getting her award, I am going to Santa Ana to Jenny Doe's Crescendo Art Studio, where I'm going to be teaching a two-day art journaling class. It's my first time teaching a two-day class, and I am nervous and excited and just can't wait to do the whole thing. So it's a big trip for both of us, I think. And on our trip, we are going to see one of my favorite people in the world, who is Christine, and you know what I realized? I've never said your last name out loud, so I hope I'm saying it right, but it's Christine Drumheller?
That's correct.
Yes, I got it right. So Christine, first of all, she's awesome, but she is the owner of Coco Daisy, and which is a scrapbooking kit club, which we'll talk about a little bit, but Christine also has a background in graphic design, and 2 years ago, she purchased Coco Daisy from its founder. But before that, she was on a million different design teams. She was a Memory Makers magazine master. She was a Creating Keepsakes Hall of Famer. She's a very important and special person, let me tell you.
Oh, thank you.
She's also mom to two incredibly cute little boys who appear in a lot of her scrapbook pages. So welcome, Christine.
Well, thank you. Thank you both very much for having me. This is fun.
We're always happy to chat with you. So I want to ask you to start us off from the very beginning. How did you fall into the black hole of scrapbooking?
Actually, even when I was a teenager, I loved, you know, I had the big old craft page album, you know, the old, they looked like craft colored sheets, and I would tape pieces of magazine, bits of sand from the beach, you know, so I've always been into memory keeping in a way, I guess. But I think it really started more when my first son was born in 2002, Nate was born, and I really wanted to capture not so much, I'm not into so much birthdays and that sort of thing, but just those little everyday moments. I didn't want those to slip by, you know? And so it started then, and it just slowly on progressed. I found kind of my niche there a little bit as far as what I really got a lot of enjoyment out of. My mother is a amazing painter, porcelain painter and quilter. So I've always been around arts and crafts. My initial beginning into the art area was more graphic design, but I found that with scrapbooking, I could kind of combine that graphic design along with more hands-on, you know, tactile, touchy-feely, and I really enjoyed that.
I actually find it interesting how many people, how many scrapbookers I have now found have actually a background in graphic design.
Yeah, I think again, it's one of those things that, you know, we love graphic design. I love typography and all of those sorts of things, but there's something that is you miss that tactile feeling. Like, for instance, when I first started my profession, I worked at a newspaper, and we would build the ad design by hand. We didn't have computers then. Okay, that's showing my age, but and when it all progressed to computers, you kind of felt like you lost something. And I think that's why scrapbooking is so nice, because you can meld the two. You can meld that artsy feel with design.
Yeah, I feel that way a little bit about digital scrapbooking, which is to say I enjoy it and I think there are some really interesting challenges, but I definitely miss, you know, getting to actually play with the paint and the paper and all that good stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So after you fell into the scrapbooking black hole, did you have a lot of success right away? Because it seems to me that, you know, you managed to get onto a lot of design teams and hit some very successful magazine teams and stuff like that right away.
Well, I guess, you know, it was one of those things where it was just kind of, you like to share your work, you're excited about it. And I hadn't been doing it for very long, and I just started submitting. You know, it was one of those things too that I'm one of those people that when I'm challenged or there's a goal, I tend to rise up to it. So I enjoyed, you know, especially like with the magazines, and I just want to verify I was not a Creating Keepsakes Hall of Famer. I was runner up a couple times.
Oh, well, so. I mean, it's a big difference, I'm sure.
But it was fun to be able to, you know, take the challenges that they had or the contest that they had and try and see what you could do with it. And I enjoyed that.
I do think that, like, I find that when I was scrapbooking, one of the things that really motivated me is any kind of challenge. Like when Rhonda ran her One Little Word challenge,
yeah,
or when there were a whole bunch of challenge vlogs that came up. And I really found those very motivating.
Yeah, it kind of gives you a starting point in a way.
Agreed. You know,
this because sometimes you're like, I'm not sure what I want to do, or it gives you something new to try or a new avenue to go. And I like that. It kind of flexes your creative muscles a little bit.
Now, it could be wrong, but when you were a Memory Makers Master, is the way that that magazine worked was every month they gave you guys like a challenge of some kind? Is that right?
Yes. Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us an example of some of those challenges? It's a long time ago, I know.
I've got to think back.
Were they graphic? Were they topic? Were they supplies?
You know, they kind of went all over. Sometimes it was color. I believe one time they asked us to do a page about something that was really inherent in our design or something that we used all of the time. And then sometimes it was actually, like you mentioned, a topic. And that, again, that was fun. It gave you that starting off point or that challenge point to begin with.
Yeah, like so many things, sometimes when you narrow the amount of stuff you can work with, or if you narrow down the possibilities, it's actually easier to create.
Yes, I agree. Because I think sometimes we get overwhelmed, especially as scrapbookers, paper crafters. We have so many supplies that sometimes it's a bit overwhelming. Like, where do I begin? You know, what, you know, you look at, it's like the, you know, the forest for the trees. What do I start with? And it's nice to at least have a point to start from, and I guess that's why I really enjoy putting together the stuff for the kits as well, is because then I have a jumping off point.
What a brilliant segue. So let's talk a little bit about, for people who don't know what a kit club is, can you explain what it is?
Sure. What we do every month is I go through, there's, like I mentioned, there's so many products out there. There's so many different color combinations and different embellishments. What I do is I take I go through all of the different manufacturers and I pull different items from each one, coordinate them so that they all go together. And then every month you get a pre-selected set of papers, cardstock, embellishments that will all work together. So again, it gives you that jumping off point. So here you get this in the mail every month and you can you can create with it, whether you want to do your project life with it, your cards with it, or your scrapbooking with it, whatever you want to do, but it's all together. So it kind of takes away the process of having to match. I remember many times when I would go into a scrapbook store, I would overhear, especially people who were kind of new to paper crafting, walking around going, there's so much, I don't know what goes with what, or what would you use this for or that for? And that's what I love, in a way, almost sending everyone this whole little pre-assembled set in every month. And it gives them and we have a design team who shows them then what to create with it, gives them ideas, and again, gives you those jumping off points.
There are two things that I adore about Kit Clubs. The first is that I feel like I get the latest and the greatest. You know, it's like I don't have a scrapbook store, so a Kit Club is a great way for me to just have delivered to my door, like what's really cool or hot or people are talking about on the internet, et cetera. Stuff I wouldn't have necessarily picked for myself, but then once I try it, I'm kind of like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. I like that. And the second thing that I really like is community. And I know Coco Daisy and most Kit Clubs have a message board or a community where not only do people just sort of chit chat about daily life, which is so very nice, but also you offer, just like we were talking about, a lot of challenges, a lot of prompts to get people started, a lot of sort of constrictions that help your creativity emerge.
Yeah, we do that. We'll do sketch challenges. We will do topic challenges sometimes. And a lot of times on our blog, we will even have little mini tutorials. Or what I think is a wonderful thing is we'll do product spotlights where we will show examples of how to use particular products. Because I think that that's one of the things that, you know, you may get these items in a kit or at the store, wherever, but you're kind of stumped. You know, there may be that initial idea of how to use it one way, but there are so many wonderful designers out there with so much creativity. And when they share that, I think you can get great ideas from them.
I agree. Now, I just want to ask you a little bit, backtracking, about your start with Coco Daisy, because you actually came on as a subscriber originally, right?
Yes, back in May of, I think it was 2007, I started out subscribing. And after I had been subscribing, I'm not sure exactly how long, it was a few months, they had a design team call. And I applied for that and got on the design team, got to know Trisha, who was the previous owner, pretty well. And she asked me to start putting together project kits. Project kits are a little different than the main kit. They are, for instance, this last year I did a mini album, a travel mini album. And what a project kit is it will have all of the items that you would need to create that mini album along with all of the instructions. So that's kind of a fun way to learn how to do something specific also. But after I started doing that with her, I started going to CHA with her, kind of learning the process that she goes through for picking everything out for the kits and so on. And in 2009, I was at a point where I found myself needing a job. And she was at the point in her life where they were moving and she was about to have a baby. And she just was saying, I can't do this anymore. There's no way I can move, have a baby, and run the business. And, you know, it was light bulb moment or destiny or whatever. And I said, well, that would be perfect because I need a job. So I took over Coco Daisy in 2010.
So what was that like, going from being a, you know, community member to a design team member to then the owner? Was that like a weird transition for you?
Not really. The community there is so welcoming, and so I knew a lot of the subscribers, having been on the design team. My number one goal was that regardless of personal life, anything that was going on, I wanted to make sure that the transition felt almost like nothing happened. And we succeeded with that. people really, aside from the letter that I sent out with the kits for those first 2 months, no one really knew that there was a new owner. It was just very, very seamless. And so that was my number one goal with it. I don't think that the community has really felt a whole lot of change. I think the change has been more for me, just going from something that you did more for fun to now having it be your job.
Ooh, let's talk about that.
That is, it's hard to maintain that sense of, you know, I don't want to say passion, but it's hard to maintain that sense of just enjoyment factor, because it's more of a, I have to do, as opposed to, I'm going to do this for me.
So what have you found ways to combat that feeling at all? Or are you just really just still dealing with it?
It has an ebb and flow, actually. There's times, and that ebb and flow definitely has to do with my work schedule. If I'm very, very pressed for time, then it just feels more like one more thing on the to-do list. Whereas if I've got things more cleared up and it's not feeling so much pressured, then I feel like I can relax and enjoy it a little bit more. I'm trying very hard to find a way to really get the desire. I used to have a desire, just I couldn't wait to do it. Couldn't wait to do it every day. I wanted to just be creative and crafty, and I'm trying to regain that. And that's a bit of a whole balance issue.
Christine, can you talk a little about the mechanics of running a kit club? Things that are more difficult than others, ways you've solved the problems, and its effect on your family life. And there are also, I think, things that people don't realize that you have to do in the background in order to run the kit club. I know, for example, that when Julie does her blog, people don't understand how many hours she spends with the photography piece of it. And I know there must be background things in running a kit club that aren't immediately obvious to most people.
Yeah, it is. I was aware that it was going to be time consuming. I was not aware it was going to be this time consuming. There are so many things that you don't realize, as far as, you know, you have customer service, which is 24/7. You have, you know, the ordering of product, and that alone is not a simple process, because you know, you have to go through, you pick out the product that you want, and you have to look at ship dates, when it will arrive, if it will arrive in time. You place your orders, and a lot of times, just because it's out there doesn't mean it's available or that they have enough available. So then you have to go back through and maybe revisit what you originally were planning or move things around. And then 9 times out of 10, every month, there's something that gets sent that's wrong. And you have to, so there's a lot to do with just product issue. There's a lot to do with packing that my mother helps a lot with that. The little goodie bags that come in every kit that have the smaller pieces and the ribbon and so on. That is what we call my mom's homework. And she does that at home. She loves homework. So there's a lot of issues with even just, you know, shipping and keeping track of who is a current subscriber, who is signing up, who is new, getting newsletters out to those people, canceling newsletters. There's so much in the background that goes on as far as just taking care of your customers. That was one of the things that I felt, okay, I can get some help with. And we have asked Mandy on our design team, and she helps me now with customer service. And that has been a huge help. Because as I mentioned, it's a constant struggle with balance. And when you have two little boys who want your attention and you want to spend time with them, that is probably my biggest struggle, is trying to find the balance to stop work, put it away, spend some time with them, do some things with them, so that they're not constantly seeing mommy just sitting at the computer working.
Do the boys help at all with the packing and stuff like that, or they're too little maybe?
Oh, no, 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 no. We call them our little Sherpas because because they will we do all of the packing and everything downstairs in the house. And so there's a lot of up and down of the stairs. So I will bribe them and have them help carry boxes. So that's a big help too.
Mom, you were going to say something and I think I
I was just going to say that also people have to remember this is a business. So you have a huge side, I'm sure, which is the financial side, accountants, bookkeeping, et cetera. And then also just keeping the website current. I just imagine that it's very difficult when you run a business out of your home to ever feel that the office is closed.
Yes, that is a big part of it. Normally, you know, you have a 9-to-5 or you have a job, not necessarily 9-to-5, but you may have a job somewhere. You go home, you leave it behind. When it's home, it's always there. So you don't, if you have a free moment, you don't feel like, well, that's at the office. No, it's here. So when I have a free moment, I feel like, you know, first priority is to work. And it's hard to find that time when you go, okay, no, it can wait. Just, you know, take the time to sit. I don't know what that is, though. I don't do that. I'm trying to think, take the time to sit and read. I think the only time I ever do that is on the airplane.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the challenge of running any business from your home, you know, at first you think, oh, I'm going to be home so much more and I'll have so much more time, but it just bleeds into every moment of your life, unless you're super disciplined, which I know I am not.
No, and I'm not either. I mean, even, you know, you'll get to the point sometimes where it's kind of crazy where you're making dinner and you're preheating the oven. You think, okay, I can bring the computer upstairs and do this for 10 minutes while the oven preheats. So you catch yourself after a while. You get to that. You almost get to that edge where you're kind of feeling burnt out and you realize, okay, I've got to find some better boundaries. And structure things a little differently. I've got to turn some things off.
Let's talk about that for a minute. What have you done to create boundaries or to lessen your obligations?
I think the one thing that I try, again, there's the ebb and flow. There's times when you just can't help it. But I try very hard. I pick up the boys. You know, we're home by 4. I try very hard to not be doing work between 4 and the time that they go to bed. You know, I will start back up again after they go to bed, but I try really hard to keep that space open. Do I adhere to that? You know, I can't say every night that I do, but I try. So that's one thing.
It's a good policy. I mean, I don't have children, so I don't have that kind of issue, but I do know that like trying to limit how often I go to the computer and stuff like that has been helpful.
Yes, and I need to, I think the one thing that I'm trying to find a time of day or a day during the week where I set aside creative time. And I know that we've talked about this before and adhering to that is very hard because there's always that, and I know it's a dirty word, but guilt, you know, there's always that guilt that you should be working.
Yeah. I think it's really hard to take time for yourself because every time you do it, you're kind of like, oh gosh, I shouldn't have done this or that. I mean, I will just say that last night at 2 a.m, I was talking to my mom on the phone and I was like, oh, I don't know why. Last night I had gone to the Museum of Modern Art with a friend and then to dinner. And I was like, I don't know why I went out with Cheryl. That was such a bad idea. I have all this work to do. I'm leaving. This was terrible. Yeah. And she was like, okay, first of all, calm down. you know, you'll get it all done. And like, you do need to have a life and you can't always be in work mode. And yet I was just sitting there being like, oh, I'm never going to get this stuff done. That was so dumb. Why did I have social life?
Yeah, I have that. I have that all of the time. And then it piles on you because you take those moments, you know, where you talk, even just talking on the phone to someone, or I'll go have lunch with mom or something. And while it's very hard to set aside in the back of your mind that little voice that's saying, you know, you have this to do and you have that to do. So you kind of are not making yourself stay in the moment and enjoy that time, because you are taking it. You may as well enjoy it, but you have that in the back of your head going, oh, I should be doing this and I should be doing that. And that's something that I need to really work on.
I will tell you, my mother, who has told me from the beginning of time, my mother has said to me, like, I would come home with homework on the weekend and she'd say, either do it tonight, meaning Friday, mm-hmm. or just plan on absolutely not doing it. Enjoy tonight and Saturday, and then just deal with the fact that you have to do it on Sunday. But it's stupid to feel guilty all Friday and Saturday. You know, it's like you've got to choose one or the other. And though she said this many times, it somehow never penetrated.
Well, as I've said before, your mother's a very wise woman.
But it is true. Like, I feel like you do have to find that balance between just saying, this is time that I am going to take for myself versus, yes. and not feel guilty or whatever about it. It has to be an appointment with yourself.
Yes. And I think that's something that, in fact, my one little word for this year is balance. And I'm really going to consciously try and focus on that. And if there are ways that I can have other people work for me in areas and do other things, that it frees up space, not only just in my schedule, but in my head, you know, then that's a bonus. And I've got to strive for that. And that's kind of the goal for the year.
Can we talk about the content of the kits and whether it has changed over the 4 years that you've owned the club, whether people are looking for something different now than they were looking for 4 years ago?
Yes, it is. It is very different. That's a good question. It's very different. When Tricia owned it, Tricia's style was more vintage, and dare I say, even a little more girly, if that makes sense. And mm-hmm. and her kits reflected that. And I lean a little more toward, you know, you may find, like, for instance, the January kit had some paper doilies in it. So I guess that's kind of got a vintage kind of feel to it. But the kits themselves are not that way. I like to do a range of colors, and I like to make them as gender neutral as I can. I have boys, and so I know that a lot of the kit clubs and a lot of the scrapbooking supplies sometimes always seem a little overwhelming toward the girl end. So I try to make sure that you could use it either way. And so we like to pick, we like to have the newest, latest, greatest product. The other thing that I like to incorporate once in a while are, like last May, in fact, we had Julie's stencil, one of your stencils in there in the kit. And a lot of people, those are some items that people probably have never tried or never been introduced to. And I like to do that. I like to push people a little bit to try new things creatively. And so that's one of the other things that we do with our kits once in a while. We have custom stamps in it every month that we design. We also have stamp subscriptions, which is a set of three stamps that we custom design. And once in a while, we will partner with other companies and have exclusive items made that will coordinate with the kits. So, yeah, they are different than when Tricia owned the company.
Do you think that people who order kits tend to be more on the clean scrapper side as opposed to the messy scrapper side? Julie, of course, being an example of a messy scrapper.
I like to call it artsy, not messy.
Sorry.
I would say both, because especially if you were to look at our design team, we have representation of both. And when you I get you can get a good idea of what your subscribers like and what their styles are by who they gravitate toward on your design team as well. So if you have certain people who really follow, like for instance, Lisa Saunders on our design team is a little bit more of an artsy, messy scrapper. And when you look at what some of the subscribers will post for the challenges and so on, I see a wide range. Some are very clean, very simple, and then some are more of the artsy. So I think you get a good range of both.
I think one of the interesting things about putting together a design team for a kit club is that you do really have to have that whole range of people who are clean and simple and want to know how to use their silhouette as and cut fancy files, to the people who are more artsy and are wanting, you know, paint and other kind of things mixed in, to the people that sit in the middle somewhere that's sort of more graphic and traditional. You know, I think that must be an interesting balancing act. Will you talk a little bit about how you put your design team together?
Yeah, what I like to do is I, you know, in a way there's, like you mentioned, there's a range and you want to look at what do people gravitate toward. And so what I like to do is look at the different styles that are out there and find people that represent those styles. For instance, we have Diana Fisher on our team. And we picked her for probably the biggest reason we picked to add her to the team was that she was very good with stamps and she was very good with making cards. And we didn't have anyone like that on our team. Now, we had everyone used the stamps and they do a wonderful job with them, but we didn't have someone who focused mostly on the stamps. So we added her. But yes, you look for all of those different styles that are out there. But I also want to get into, I think when you put together a group or a design team, that one of my biggest things is not necessarily just do they fit this particular, you know, area that we need, but will they fit with the group? Because you have a group of women who are going to be working together, you know, in a lot of ways on the message board almost daily. And so you try to find a group of women that not only am I just drawn to, but that I feel will meld well with the rest of the group.
So do you make those decisions based on that you know most of the people who joined the design team beforehand, or guessing from their posts on their blogs, or how do you do that?
Some of them I've known, some of them other people on the design team have known, so you get recommendations. So you kind of do a little background research. You know, you may ask the design team, I'm interested in so-and-so, what have you heard? Do you know about them? Have you seen their work? Do you like their work? And those kinds of questions. And then you'll go and you'll look at the work, you'll read some blog posts, and just get a feel for what they enjoy doing, what their style is, and you can get an idea of how they will meld with the rest of the group, I think, when you do that.
I think it's amazing actually how much you can learn from somebody from a quick peek through their blog.
Yes, it's true.
It's kind of cool.
Can you talk about that a little, Julie?
Well, I mean, I feel a little bit like a peeping Tom sometimes when you're reading blogs, you know.
Well, it is out there in the public.
I know. But it is, I mean, it's a peek into somebody's life. And the thing that I find interesting is people blog about what's important to them.
It's true.
And so I think you really capture somebody's personality. Like if they're blogging a lot about something that their child did and you see post after post about it, then you know that they're really focused on their child and that's something that's deeply important to them. If you see somebody who's posting a lot about a trip they took or, you know, a beautiful vistas that they saw when they went for a walk on the beach or, you know, it's just a way of getting a hold of who they are. I mean, the best way I can think to describe it is if you look at Pinterest, for example, on Pinterest, people have boards that they name various things. And a lot of times you'll find that somebody will have a board that says, you know, this is my board for ducks. This is for scrapbook pages. This is for, you know, dogs, whatever, by category. And that's the way that their brain works. And for instance, my Pinterest boards tend to be more like, I like the style, I like the design, I like the colors, because that's how my brain works and I categorize things. So I do think that people's online presence is always sort of a trail of breadcrumbs to who they are and how they behave, you know?
Yeah, the breadcrumb is a good analogy. I think you're right, because you see little tidbits of what they're geared toward.
Yes.
I agree with that.
I mean, you can't ever really know somebody. For instance, I would never discuss politics or religion or anything like that on my, you know, publicly on the internet ever. But if you ever meet me in person, I'm very vocal about my feelings, you know?
Right.
And the same thing is...
there's certain things I think that you, just because they are hot buttons for so many people, that you just stay away from.
Yeah. So, and I think those are some of the things that do create a full person, but which you don't always get from people's blogs and stuff. But I think yet it comes back to this whole idea again, that there are breadcrumbs, there's a trail, you get sort of a hint of, are they funny? You know, do they have a sense of humor about things, et cetera, et cetera. Can you hear the crazy sirens that are outside my apartment, or is that just me?
I'm not hearing them.
Well, excellent job with the microphone then. Okay.
Christine, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what you do when you're at CHA and what you hope to get out of it this time.
Well, we talked about the whole, I'll start with the whole balance issue. Normally, whenever I go to CHA, it's a 3-day process. The first day I walk the floor and look at all the new product, make notes, and kind of get an idea in my head as far as what I want to put together for the next few months worth of kits. Then the next day I will spend hold up in the hotel room putting together those kits and getting the orders ready. Then the third day you go place the orders and then I go home. So what I did this time is I actually included an extra day, because a lot of my design team is going to be out there. I'm very excited because a number of them, this will be the first time I'm meeting them in real life. And I wanted an extra day and I'm excited about that. So there's going to be an extra day in there that I am going to just hang out.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So I'm proud of myself for doing that. But what I'm looking for at CHA is, you know, my number, I love patterned paper. I absolutely adore patterned paper. And I get a thrill putting together papers from all kinds of manufacturers, making the colors match, pulling them together. And that's usually my jumping off point. So it's a matter of looking at all the new products, seeing what's out there, seeing if there's anything new and exciting, you know, if it's going to be more of the trends we've already seen, or if there's new trends. And then it's just a matter of trying to pull all of those bits and pieces together.
I will say that when I put together the kit, the Art Journal Everyday kit for December for Coco Daisy,
yes,
that was so hard. It was so hard because, you know, it's such a weird thing to sort of know ahead of time what you want to create and how you're going to create it. And it was interesting because I ended up just going with I'm just going to put the things I really like into a kit and hope they work together, you know, and then like you gave me a price point. And so then I'm trying to figure out how to make like, oh, I want this, but that means I'd have to sacrifice these two things. Is two better than one? Well, I want the kit to look like it's full of stuff, so maybe I should get rid of this, but I love that. This is hard to find. I mean, it was endless and it was so hard. And I feel like it must be something you get better at with practice.
You know what you do? But I think one of the things we just talked about was, you know, my style versus the previous owner's style, and that there's two ways that I look at when I start to put together a kit. Is, first of all, do I want to use it? I mean, that's the number one thing for me, is do I want to play with this stuff? Does this stuff get me excited? Do I like the way it looks together? Do I want to play with it? And so that's kind of the beginning. There will usually be a particular line or a particular paper or embellishment or something that gets me excited, that, okay, this is what I'm going to build around. and then you will start from there. But the other thing is, some kits come together really fast and some are a bit more of a struggle. It just kind of depends how the process is going to go. But like you said, because there's times when you have in your mind, you put it all together, and then of course you have your price point and you go, oh, shoot, I can't do that. I have to take that out. And that was something you really wanted, but you can't use it this time. Or you find out that it's not even available yet, you know, because you have to deal with shipping dates and all of that kind of thing. So yeah, it can be fun, but it can be tedious at the same time.
Do you think some of the creative mojo that you used to use for your actual scrapping now goes into building these kits?
Ooh, that's a good point. I never looked at it that way, but I have to think that in a way, yes. That a lot of that creative energy is maybe being directed toward that.
Very wise, Mother. Very wise.
I'm telling you. So,
like a little Yoda, like a little green Yoda,
a little wizened, bald,
exactly. Big ears, big
Thank
pointy
you.
Ears.
Thank
You're
you
welcome.
So much,
Christine. Really? I want. Sorry, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say the other thing that I'm enjoying as far as creative energy is, you know, working with the packaging and those kind of tweaks and the design of the homepage. That I enjoy too. And so that kind of is a nod toward using your creativity, I think, too.
I wonder if you have some, you've had the business now for 2 years.
Yeah, a little like 2.5.
So I wonder if you have some tips. If there's somebody out there who is, you know, interested in creating a scrapbooking business like a kit club, mm-hmm. what are like 3 tips you would say, do this, don't do this?
Hmm. 3 tips.
Well, it could be any number. 3 is completely arbitrary. I just picked that out of a hat because it seemed nice.
My first, I would say research. You know, look at what's out there. If you feel you have something that's a little different that you can offer, because there's a number of kit clubs out there. So I would say do your research first. Know ahead of time that it will take, you know, 90% of your time, that it is a commitment. And if you think that it's going to be something you're going to do for fun on the side, it's not for you. So know, again, and that falls under that whole research, you know, talk around, ask around, and see what the time involved in it is. And then I think the other thing is just, if there's a particular avenue that you want to pursue as far as, because I firmly believe that the only way to really have a successful business is to have one that you're passionate about and that you enjoy doing. And so it would have to be something that you enjoy doing and that you're passionate about. So again, it can't be something that you want to just do part of the week.
Well, that actually loops back to the question my mom asked about whether you think your creative energy is going into designing the kits and, you know, the website and all that stuff, which is, I think you enjoy the creativity of putting the kits together. You enjoy the creativity of doing the website and that kind of stuff. I know with my own business, I enjoy the blogging. I enjoy the photo taking. I even enjoy the photo editing, even when I hate it, you know. And I think like that is a huge part of, you have to enjoy the business aspects of it in order to run a business.
Yeah, I agree. There's that 80-20 rule. You know, if 80% of the time you're happy doing it, then you're golden, you know. But there's still this, and I, you know, up until this, the passion for that goes away, I think no matter how busy I am, I'm going to enjoy it, because every month there's that moment. You know, you put the kits together and you're mostly you have some samples, but most of it is coming together through pictures, catalogs, online. So you're putting it all together. And as the product comes in, of course, it doesn't all come in at once. And, you know, you're working on, say, for instance, right now, we just finished up January and February is all up on the shelves yet, what I have of it so far. And there will be that time when I have to put together the kits for the design team, and I'll pull everything down and put it all together and spread it out. And there's that moment when you go, oh, this is cool, you know, because you're excited because it did all come together the way you had pictured in your mind. So then that, you know, you don't realize sometimes that that is creative energy. That is excitement for paper, you know, pretty paper and playing with that stuff and being creative. And I love that time of the month, every month when I get to pull all of that down and lay it all out for the first time.
Well, I think it's about time for us to wrap up, and sounds like a good place to wrap up. Thank you, Christine. You're a great guest. And I have to say also, thank you for letting me be a friend of yours, even though I am the great Kit Club killer. There has not been a single Kit, excuse me, I have not been in a single design team for a Kit Club that has not shuttered soon after. I think I killed at least three or four of them in my career. So just know that sitting next to me may mean your Kit Club will die.
Doubt. You've been our guest designer.
That's true. Just don't let me any closer than that. That's all I'm saying to you. But thank you. Thank you. Where can people find you online?
We are at www.cocodaisy.com.
Awesome. And mother, as always, you are wise and beautiful and everything wonderful. And I'm not saying that just because I'm going to see you tomorrow. And so I better be nice.
I'm looking forward to seeing you at CHA where my business card reads Julie's Little Helper.
Oh my gosh. You have to give me one. Yeah. I can't wait to see you guys.
So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all around. And you can find me at balzerdesigns.typepad.com, and do leave us your comments or questions at balzerdesigns.com/arting. We'd love to hear from you. And of course, if you tweet about the show, please use the hashtag #arting, ARTING. Thanks so much for listening. And we'll see you the next time on the Adventures in Arting podcast.